Good
Hi, everyone.
evening. I'll give you a little intro. Good evening. Today is April 17th, Wednesday, the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. This week's chapter step is There Is Our Solution. And Melissa will be speaking tonight. Thank you so much, Melissa. Take it away.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Jim. Thanks so much for your service. My name is Melissa C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I live in New York. Yeah, I'm happy to be here tonight talking about an awesome chapter. I'll really quickly just tell you who I am a little bit before I jump into knowing that there's a solution. Because I think it's helpful when you know that I'm somebody who required a solution, rather than just someone who just talks a lot. I do talk a lot, but I come here, I earned my seat in Overeaters Anonymous at the worst of this disease. I was over 300 pounds. I was crushed. I was living in morbid obesity. I was constantly battling the food. I had periods of times where I was able to take off the weight. I always regained it. I was never at a normal, healthy body weight for any length of time. I was either losing or gaining, and my entire life was spent on diets. I've tried every single solution over and over and over and over again. I knew I had a problem with food from a very early age. I knew what those foods were, and I had a lot of that great information, and yet having information never gave me enough power to do anything about it for long. I came here. I was like, I could not bear to live inside of me another minute. I had all wonderful things on the outside of my life. I have a good marriage, healthy children, a job, a home, and in my own hands, I felt like I was destroying it all. And I was so down about it. I thought there would be nothing that could save me. But there is, because there truly is a solution. For me, I surrendered. I grabbed hold of the directions that were outlined. I asked someone to help me, and that in this particular time, I meant business. I was like, there was nothing I was going to negotiate. If she would have told me to crawl across broken glass on my knees, I would have done it. She would have said, get on your head and do a handstand. I would have done it. I would have done everything in my own power to do anything. And I think that's a great spot to be in, and what was important about the person that I went to for help was she was someone in whom the problem had been solved. She was someone who had lost, for me, it was someone who lost a tremendous amount of weight. That was a hook for me. I needed someone who was living in a normal sized body, who took out her pictures and showed me, I used to look like you. I used to say the things you said, I used to do the things you did, and I don't live this way anymore. And actually, what really grabbed her for me was she had a relationship with God. She had a faith. In fact, she was someone I was like, yikes, she's a little too God crazy for me in the beginning. And that is exactly what I needed. I needed God crazy. I needed the full blown. By the way, there's not a spiritual component to this program. This is a spiritual program. And I needed to know that I required a spiritual solution. I heard someone share once that if you take the God out of the 12 steps, it's like taking the stuff that's inside a life jacket that keeps you afloat. Take out all that inside stuff. What you got is a couple of pieces of fabric. And that's what it was like for me. So I was ready to take the whole thing. And so since that time, I've been relieved of over 160 pounds. I've lived in recovered. I have been recovered for over 10 years. I'm a normal size. I go in my closet and every single thing that fits me for the last, I've been the same size for years now. And I don't even think about it. The weather got warm, I pulled something out. It fit me, just like my sandals fit me. You know, my anything that I want to wear fits me at any point in time. And for someone like me, that's an incredible miracle. And I don't struggle with the food at all anymore. For me, the problem has been removed. I have no desire to eat those problematic foods. It's like they don't even exist. And that is truly miraculous. It's nothing short of a miracle. So here we are, and there's a solution, right? I'm someone who required a solution. You know, right in the beginning on page 17, it talks about this spirit of fellowship, that there's a friendliness, that there's an understanding, that there's something that we have which is indescribable. And that rather than just like, you know, we've been saved, right? And people who've been saved from a shipwreck, they get rescued and they go their separate ways, right? And that's not the case for us. We actually remain here, because having a shared common apparel is just one element in the cement that binds us, but that in and of itself would never have held us together as we're now joined. And here's the thing, what holds us together is the tremendous fact that we have discovered a common solution, that we have a shared solution, we have a way out, and we can absolutely agree on this. And in this way out, we join in brotherly and harmonious action. So the paragraph, it talks about friendships and that we get rescued together and that those relationships don't endure once the rescuing is done and the celebration is over. But for me, my recovery depends on getting back in the water and helping those who require rescuing. And so that's what keeps me here. And that's the harmonious action that I participate with. You know, I can't remain rescued unless I'm willing to get back in the water and help others. In fact, people who fail to do that, they don't remain, they disappear. They go their separate ways. And most of them, you know, they don't remain well. This is the requirement, you know. It talks about this chapter also talks about that we have an illness and that this is an illness that, you know, is very different from cancer, because if you've got cancer, everybody feels sorry for you and nobody's angry at you or hurt by the fact that you've got cancer. But it's not so with the alcoholic illness. You know, I would say, you know, one of the dangers about having this disease was that I didn't even view it as a disease. I really thought that it was my own weak spirit, my own weak will, that I ought to be able to do something about this. And, you know, and the rest of the world saw it that way too. That is pretty, most people don't understand that this really is a disease. They think, get your shit together. Pull yourself together. Get it together. Put the food down. What's wrong with you? You know what you should be doing. And that's not the case with us. That's just not the case with me. You know, and even more frustrating is that the sick person who has this disease has no enthusiasm for the treatment. It's like when you told me you had to do all these things. Here I was, like I had lots of experiences in and out of OA. But when you told me some of the things I had to do, I would say, I don't want to do that. No, thank you. It's like we actually have a treatment that works. This program, by the way, works 100% if you follow the directions 100%. And yet, many of us have had experiences where we say, yeah, that'll work for her, but not for me. Or I don't want to do that. Or that's so rigid. You know, I say for years, the solution I wanted was the OA light plan. I wanted the lightest possible plan out there. That's not the solution. You know, if you're thinking you're gonna like get a light program, in my experience, people who get recovered and stay recovered, they don't work a light program. They work with intensity. You know, and so Here we find out on page 18, the ex-problem drinker who has found the solution. That's me, right? I believe I found the solution. I'm properly armed. We're properly armed with the facts about ourselves. I'm armed with the fact about myself. And those people can generally win the confidence, the entire confidence of another in a few hours, right? And so to me, I think we're given directions on how to carry the message, how to win the confidence of others. First of all, you have to be an ex-problem drinker. You have to be an ex-problem eater. If you're out there still eating, you don't have anything to offer anybody. You cannot transmit what you do not have, right? Can't sponsor somebody if you're in the food. It doesn't work, you know? And nor can you be somebody who really doesn't have this problem. You know, my doctor tried to tell me, my parents tried to tell me, they didn't have this problem. They weren't armed with the facts about themselves, and they weren't an ex-problem eater, you know? And so when we carry the message, we're not supposed to use frothy emotional appeal, you know, meaning I'm not telling people you're killing yourself with this, like, stop it, cut it out. Rather, I talk about myself and I talk about how I was killing myself. And I find that, you know, normally I like to share pictures of myself, but I'm not going to do it tonight. And that tends to draw people in. And the reason it draws people in, you know, or if I share a particular painful story of my suffering, why does that draw people in? I don't think it's because we're like cruel and we like to see other people suffering. I don't believe that. It's because it tells somebody, you know what you're talking about. You've been there, right? You have this experience too. And I think it offers hope to the still sick and suffering. I think about the people who carried the message to me. One of the things that I remember was a particular woman who shared in a meeting. And, you know, what I remembered about her is that her skirt, it sounds so shallow and petty, but her shirt was tucked into her skirt, right? Then, you know, that was like a normal sized person. You tuck your shirts in. And I was like, oh my gosh. And then she laid out pictures of herself. That's what convinced me. It was like I saw that there was a transformation. So, you know, the man who's making the approach has had the same difficulty, that he obviously knows what he's talking about, that his whole deportment shouts at the new prospect that here's a man with a real answer. And this person should have no attitude of holier than thou. Nothing whatever except a sincere desire to be helpful. No fees to pay, no axes to grind, no people to please, no lectures to be endured. These are the conditions we found most effective. So what's helpful? What are they telling us is helpful? Well, the right information delivered from a calm and humble messenger. The person who's talking to you should be relatively calm. You know, they should not have a superior attitude, you know, or an axe to grind, right? Meaning a complaint that they've got to discuss, right? If I were here and my big hot issue would be, you know, the food industry, then I would have an axe to grind. Or if it was about the diet industry, you know, or about how sugar's in every product, that would be an axe to grind. That's not helpful to anybody. That's not my mission. My mission is to be helpful, to be humble and helpful. You know, and I would say that a person who's carrying the message should have the right demeanor, should be kind, should be friendly, should be warm. You know, the way that we carry ourselves is often more important than the words we use, or that the information that we have. If we're going to err on the side between correct information and being kind, let's go with being kind, right? I think the correct information delivered from someone kind is the ultimate, right? Is the ultimate way. But none of us get well when people are cruel to us. And that's That's really what it's telling us here. So here's the thing. We're going to have to talk about things that are controversial, but we don't want to. And one of the things that people find controversial is God, is cultivating and forming a relationship with God. But if I skip that part, if I'm afraid to tell people that that's the solution, what am I offering them? I'm offering them another human solution. That is not the solution. This is a program that is designed to help each person, to enable each person to cultivate and form their own relationship with God. It is the essential requirement. And when people say, what if I don't believe in God? The question I always ask people is, do you want to? Do you want to? Because if you don't want to, the book kind of says, go back to eating, go back to drinking. Because what convinces us, what drives us into a state of reasonableness is the food, is the alcohol. I came here because I had no other power left in me, and there was no other human power that was working. So the solution is going to have to be cultivating a relationship with power. And I think, the chapter also goes through and it tells us to give us a real clear understanding of what a true compulsive overeater is. And, why do we need to know this now? Why is it important for us to really know that we're the real deal? There's a lot in this book. A lot of the book is spent on step one. And there's a really important reason. Because unless we're convinced, utterly convinced, that we are without power, the idea of seeking power seems unimportant. Why would I need to seek power if I wasn't convinced that I lacked power? So this chapter is another chapter that's going to help kind of remind me that I need power. And the thing that I think it tells me is that I've got a mind, right, that the main problem centers in my mind rather than in my body. It says this on page 23. It centers in my mind and not in my body. And that I come up with 100 alibis when you ask me why I picked up the food again. And alibis are just explanations, reasons, and excuses, right? And by the way, my brain minimizes the danger of food. That's what it does. When I am left to my own human power, my brain says, this is ridiculous. This is not a real problem. You're smart. You're strong. You've been abstinent a long time. Or this is just a blank. It's just a little bit. Or it's just the weekend. Or it's just a vacation. It says anything necessary to get me to eat. And so I think what I really, I know my time is short, and what I really want to get to is that my favorite, there's two parts here that are my favorite. And it's this, the great fact. Here it is. The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences, which have revolutionized our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and towards God's universe. And here's the important part, the central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. So the central fact of my life isn't, well, there might be something out there. No, it is the absolute certainty So when people say, can you recover and not believe? The answer actually comes right here. The answer is no, because the central fact of my life, that means everything else in my life, revolves around the fact that the old leadership of me was thrown out. There was a revolution that happened inside me. And what happened inside,
timer check.
God, yeah, God entered into my heart and changed me. That's the solution. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Melissa. Thank you for your time, your wisdom, your sharing. That was really, really powerful. We will now open the meeting for questions or for 3-minute shares. As this is a big book study, sharing and questions should relate specifically to the chapter and step being studied this week, which again is that there is a solution. We ask that you accept this guideline in order to keep the meeting on track. If you'd like to share or ask a question, please raise your virtual hand, which is under reactions, or *9 if you're on the phone. We'll call the raised hands in order, and the Zoom host will ask you to unmute when it's your turn. Would the timekeeper please set a timer for 3 minutes for each share and announce when time is up? The speaker is asked a question. Please allow 3 minutes for the answer. All right, we've got some folks in the queue here. Let me...
Jim, Kimberly was first.
All right, Kimberly, go ahead.
Hey there, I'm a nervous Kimberly. I am a compulsive reader, anorexic and bulimic. And Melissa, thank you so much for sharing. You know, it's interesting because although my disease manifests itself differently on the outside, I constantly was battling food, constantly battling food. And it was just, it was nonstop. And you talked about the hook, what hooked you originally. And, you know, what hooked me this time around is that I needed somebody in whom also struggled with exercise bulimia and laxatives and all the things that I do and anorexia, because I needed somebody who could call me on my BS and just quit it all. And now it hasn't been very long. I've been abstinent by the grace of God for 9 months, which is a true miracle. That's not as important to me. What is important to me today in a sponsor and in my sponsor is getting to God. You know, it's all of the stuff that I do that blocks me from God. And, you know, I had to make a big amend today, and it was, my heart was racing and it was pounding. And one of the things, Melissa, that I hear from you a lot is that you're always so welcoming. And, you know, whenever I see you in a meeting, you're always very welcoming to the newcomer. You have a very open heart. I've called you before. You've always been so kind to me and so helpful. And, you know, I think about that in my daily interaction with people in the program and outside of the program. Inside the program, it's a lot easier, but, you know, outside the program in real life, it's just that loving and kind and open heart, you know, that when I can live and operate like that, life just seems to be so much easier for everybody. And so thank you, thank you, thank you. And I appreciate you sharing.
Thanks, Kimberly. And Peggy H, you're up next.
Excuse me. Thank you. Peggy H from Arizona, compulsive overeater. Thank you, Melissa. Great share. And I love that you go to the heart of it about a higher power, the need for that higher power. So my question is, when you're working with someone, do you get a sense of their openness to God, to a higher power, soon into your work with with him or her, or do you kind of just wait it out until you get to, you know, the second step, and then see, and how, like, what kind of conversation does that look like, to see whether it's something that you're going to continue with if they're not open to that idea?
Thank you. I realized I muted. Yeah, actually, that I don't waste time on that. I get right to it right away. A requirement for me when I'm going to work with someone is, day one, I ask people to start 30 minutes every day, prayer and meditation. I don't care how they pray, what their particular faith says, or their own spiritual practice. That makes no concern of my own. But they have to be interested in seeking God, because step one tells me that nothing but an act of providence, which means nothing but a miraculous intervention, right? God's gotta perform an intervention. And so I say, like, if you want a miracle, you actually have to ask for one. People don't get a miracle without asking. So it's okay if you don't believe per se, but you have to want to believe. And yeah, I do it right off the bat. Right off the bat.
Thank you, Peggy and Melissa. And next up, Summer.
Hi, Summer, compulsive overeater. Melissa, thanks so much for your share. I've heard you on podcasts, and seeing you personally and talking to you is, like, super cool. I just wanted to know, what page was that on, when the last thing that you said about the central fact of our life, etc.?
Absolutely. So if you get your book, it is page 25.
Great. Thank you so much.
Yep.
Thanks, Summer. And next up is Joni.
Hello, everyone. I'm a compulsive overeater. My name is Joni. I'm just coming back. I'm very grateful to be at this meeting. It's grateful. I'm just happy to see some familiar faces and some new faces. So I wrote a couple of things down. I don't know, for some reason, when you said I was crushed, it just hit me. And the other thing, that you were never at a normal weight, that you were either losing or gaining. I just had the tremendous amount of identification with that. That was my whole life. I never was at a normal weight. I was always in the battle constantly. And then I loved what you said about the hopelessness and the willingness of the combination of those two things, how important they are. You know, I've read this book a couple of times, and I was taught that, you know, we have to stress the hopelessness. If I'm not hopeless, then I'm not going to be teachable. And I have to tell you, this last, such a darkness. I was in such a darkness this last, I had never experienced anything like this in my life. And it's going to turn out to be a stepping stone. And I know that. I know that, but it's very painful, and I'm just grateful that I'm back. And I have a sponsor who told me to do 3 meetings a week, and she said, "What about tonight?" And I said, "Okay, fine." And she said, "Turn your camera on." And I said, "Okay, fine." She said, "Introduce yourself." And I said, "Okay." And she read my food yesterday, and she said, "Well, what about this?" And she said, "Do you want a new experience?" And I said, "Yes, I do." And she said, "Get rid of it." And I said, "Okay." So, you know, I'm going to do it. I'm just going to do what she tells me to do, because I don't know any better. And I don't want to be in this pain anymore. And I have 2 people that are depending on me to help them right now, who are helpless, and I need to be effective in my life and in their life. So I just want to be the best I can be. Thank you.
Thank you, Joni, and welcome back. We will now stop the recording for unrecorded questions or shares. Would the Zoom host please stop the